Welcome to What Goes Up, a Bloomberg Weekly Markets podcast. I'm Sarah Poncek, a reporter on the Cross Asset team.
And I'm Mike Regan, a senior editor on the markets team.
This week on the show, in the stock market today, it seems there's only one thing that's constant: speed. The fastest fall into a bear market on record was met with a forceful rally. In fact, the fastest in about 90 years. We talked to one investor who, through all the back and forth, has been looking for opportunities.
And as always, we'll close out the episode with our tradition, the craziest thing I saw in markets this week. And Sarah, I will have you know, this podcast is a special occasion because I actually took a shower for this podcast. I can't really explain why, but I felt the need, if I was going to talk to you and our distinguished guests, that I needed to take a shower. I have not felt that need when I'm writing and editing, though, for whatever reason.
It's all mental. We're not in the office. No one knows what we look like, what anyone here is wearing, how long it's been since anyone showered. But there's something about talking to someone, to each other, where it feels like you need to at least feel presentable.
That's right. Well, everyone out there listening can take confidence that I smell somewhat decent, you know, better than I did a half an hour ago.
But he scrubbed.
But let's welcome to the show our guest for the first time. He is the CEO of the investment management firm Alger. His name is Dan Chung. Dan, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And Sarah, why don't you tell the folks about the podcast hotline? We've haven't been getting much love on the hotline. What do you let them know about the number?
Yeah, come on. Everyone's at home. You should have more time to give us a call. You know the drill. If you hear or see any crazy stories in the markets, you have any questions for us, you just want to give us any feedback, you can give us a call. That number is 646-324-3490. And remember, if you leave us a message, we may even play it on the show for you to hear yourself.
That's right. And you, do it as a listener, do not have to shower for the podcast. I'll just throw that out there.
There's no rule.
No rules. But Dan, I'm curious to hear your take on this ferocious rebound in the markets we've seen this week. I was reading some of your thoughts about how this will all play out. And you did mention that you think, well, the economic recovery may be kind of slow and gradual, but you did expect sort of a V-shaped recovery in stocks. And sure enough, this week, I mean, we've seen the Dow Jones Industrial rise about something like 20% in 3 days in the middle of this week. Is this that V-shaped recovery, or is this kind of just a head fake and we'll get the real recovery when there's more clarity on the economic situation and the virus?
I think it's a little combination of two things. So first of all, it's a natural snapback to just the rapidity and the ferociousness of the decline, which, as you've noted, we haven't seen in 90 years. But I think it is also fundamentally the signs of the market's recovery and the pattern that will probably unfold over the next couple months. So in particular, I think we're likely to see, some retest, i.e. markets falling back a bit from where we are as we process a lot of news over the next couple months. But I am actually fairly confident that the absolute lows that we just saw will probably be, the hold. They won't be any low. We won't be going lower than that. And it is kind of the process of beginning of recovery, actually.
So how do you kind of go about couching market action with what's going on in the economy? This past week, we got that unbelievable initial jobless claims number, 3.28 million, more than quadruple the previous record. And it seems there's a worry that over the next couple of months, we're going to continue to get economic data. It's going to continue to be really rough. What does the market typically do in these situations? Will the market look past the economic data to see what's coming in the future? What can we expect there?
Right. So I think what we'll see is the market is always looking forward, and therefore, oddly enough, on the rapidity of the decline, you know, it's sort of the fear, the shock of things going from basically so good in February to so bad so quickly, and also in particular, the unknown and unexpected nature of this. I mean, this is really the first major health scare that we've had since the influenza of 1918. But I think the markets will also see that we're going to see, you know, a peak in the COVID-19 cases. Italy seems to have peaked, and you know, that's a positive sign, really, for what the pattern might be in the U.S. And I don't want to minimize, of course. I mean, this is still a terrible healthcare crisis, and many people are sick, and unfortunately, many people will die. But I think, you know, like in Italy, we will see a peak and then a decline of the cases. We'll see a beginnings of recovery in that. And the market will anticipate that. It is also, of course, the market reacting to, and I have to commend, you know, the Federal Reserve and even Congress. I mean, they are acting very quickly to offset the economic damage that is being created by the you know, the shutdowns and the precautions that we're taking to blunt the worst of the impacts of COVID-19.
You know, Dan, I think, you know, the assumption is that this is a very harsh but sort of temporary shock to the economy. But from an investing standpoint, I wonder if you, you know, are there any areas of the market that you see perhaps permanently changed because of this? You know, and I'm thinking, obviously, it's going to be a long time, I think, before the, say, the cruise ship business is back to where it was, and travel and leisure across the board. Are there any sort of permanent or semi-permanent dislocations that you see that an investor should be aware of as a result of this?
That's a great question. I mean, I do think that consumers might, for several years, rethink travel. And, you know, in terms of what do I think will come back slowly and gradually, it's definitely things like the cruise ships, airlines, you know, hotels, probably actually, you know, slowest will be cruise ships. But I think you may see consumers really reconsider a little bit, you know, how and where and what they like to do when they travel and take vacations. So that's, I don't think the industry is permanently damaged in any sense. I mean, people love travel, but I do wonder about, for example, whether, airlines will have to adjust, and cruise ships will adjust to consumers wanting to be a little less tightly packed into, airplanes and cruise ships. And therefore maybe, you know, cruises will adjust to that, but they'll be maybe a little bit more expensive, and so fewer people will be interested in taking them. You know, there are other things, though, that I'm pretty sure will come back really quite quickly, and I would think, you know, top of the list would be dining out, restaurants.
Something that hasn't changed, Dan, though, and I think it's been surprising to some, is the fact that even on the way down, it's a lot of the areas of the market, a lot of companies that led on the way up during the bull market that have actually still outperformed. So you think a lot of growth companies, particularly a lot of tech, the FANG name, sure, Amazon, Netflix might be doing particularly well in a situation that we're dealing with now with the spreading outbreak. But is it surprising to you at all? Or do people maybe underestimate how healthy some of these companies have become over time? Sure, they led the bull market on the way up, but a lot of them are pretty mature now.
I think you're absolutely right. Actually, high quality growth companies have performed very well in this downturn. And based on history, that's actually a little bit anomalous. However, I think based on modern current trends, it's actually something that we're pleased to see. It says that in many places, investors are still understanding that there are some really strong innovation and growth drivers in our economy, and that the companies that are leading those trends, you know, despite the disruption that this will cause for their businesses near term, you know, many of them still will benefit from, you know, the trends towards big data, cloud computing, e-commerce, you know, and streaming media. And in fact, I do think actually you asked about the, you know, if some industries will be sort of negatively impaired. I think actually what might happen is that some industries will be positively benefited by this. And it may result in sort of, you know, for example, I mean, the easiest is online shopping is clearly taking a huge surge up from already a very long 25-year growth trend. And it may actually be something that consumers, now that they're comfortable ordering groceries and necessities online, a large part of them, continue to do so after the crisis has faded, because Amazon and the other groceries that are doing online delivery are doing a great and important job right now. The same thing would be true for streaming media, where clearly Netflix, Hulu, Disney Plus are all seeing a tremendous usage and interest in their services. But on a more serious side, some of the most important cloud software and enterprise technology companies are also benefiting, because we are all having to work from home, and we are testing really in a dramatic fashion some of the newest technologies that allow us to do that. So a lot of that is data center based and cloud center based, but also software as a service. And I think a lot of the new technologies are proving their ability to adapt, their ability to allow us to continue to function and run our businesses at a high level. And even, as we speak here, many are using Zoom. I just got off a Zoom conference call, and I've also had my first Zoom cocktail hour with a bunch of friends. And I think we'll find that some of these companies and the new products that they're delivering were already in a growth trend. And in fact, this crisis is causing us to actually use and benefit from their products. And so I do think that there's very good fundamental reasons why those companies and their stocks have held up well. And I think many of them, when we come out of this crisis, will continue to reclaim their leadership in the market.
You know, Dan, at Alger, you offer several different strategies. I wanted to ask a little bit about the dynamic opportunity strategy. It's a long-short hedge strategy. The whole sort of long-short style seemed to be slowly going out of style for a long time there, when we had this just what seemed like an endless bull market. Is this crisis kind of breathing new life into that strategy? Do you suspect there'll be sort of a renewed interest in a long short strategy going forward, even after we recover from this?
Well, I certainly think so. I mean, we created this strategy for actually first out of a desire for Alger's own shareholders, which is a family, multiple branches of a family that. You know, up until we created the strategy, they'd only invested in our long-only strategies and basically a very simple bond portfolio, almost like the classic 60-40, except we were more like 75-25 because we were big believers in our strategies. But we created it to preserve capital in down markets, to be opportunistic about the upside in bull markets, and also to give investors a much smoother ride. So, half or less than half the volatility of the S&P 500. And it has actually performed exceptionally well recently. This year to date, it's down maybe 1 or 2% against an S&P that's down, I think, 23%. And if you look also over the last 3 and 5 years, this strategy has actually outperformed the S&P over the 3-year period. And it's about, it's about equal to the S&P, I think, over the 5. Now, there's a lot of volatility in the markets, so that might change a little bit. But the point I would make is that I think long, short, actively managed, you get the benefit of downside protection, protecting your capital in markets like this. But with a modest participation in the upside of equities over the long term, you're able to, in particular, handily outperform many bond funds. I think, one of my concerns is many investors have too much in cash and bonds. They've benefited recently from, a low interest rate cycle, but that really ended a few years ago. And for a lot of investors, if you want to meet your long-term needs, and have see your wealth grow, you really need to have a good combination of equities, bonds, cash. Of course, there's a reserve for times like this, but also I think long-short strategies that can kind of straddle between bonds and equities. In other words, bonds are obviously less volatile, but the returns on an absolute basis have not been particularly good for quite a while. And meanwhile, equities, of course, unfortunately, it's a lot of volatility, even though they are, in the end, the long-term winners. And, you know, there's a lot of data that shows over, I think, a 20-year period, there's never been a rolling 20-year period where bonds outperform equities. And in fact, over 10-year periods, equities dominate. But of course, the intermediate volatility, the times like this, you know, are very shocking, and they're difficult for you know, regular investors. You know, we're not you know, professionals and watching the market. They're difficult for them to handle. And you know, the biggest fear I have is that so many individual investors will make the classic mistake of, for example, selling out of equities now and putting it into cash. And you know, inevitably, this crisis will fade. Markets will recover, I think, in a V-shaped pattern well ahead of the economic recovery, and they'll miss out on a lot of gains over the next couple of years. So that's why I believe long-short equity really has a great place in everyone's portfolio.
Say you're talking to that kind of individual at this point in time where we're at now. I mean, you mentioned a couple companies like Zoom Video, which I looked up more than 100% this year. Shares have more than doubled. That are potentially going to advance because of an unfortunate situation like this. Is it better at this point in time, seeing where we're at in markets and also with the development of the virus, to be thinking about companies that could see structural change to the upside due to an event of this sort? Or is it better to now be looking at companies that might be mispriced, may have been beaten down, brought down, as people say, threw the baby out with the bathwater? I guess it's ultimately a question about value versus growth, maybe, but is it better to be looking at companies that might be mispriced at this point in time, or companies that could see positive change?
So I'm going to frustrate you. It's actually better to be doing both of those things plus one more. So what we're doing at Alger right now is we are literally looking to make sure our portfolios have a good balance between companies that are actually going to benefit from this, and the benefits might be structural and long-term and enduring. I think Amazon and Netflix, whose stocks actually haven't done much this year, which has been highly defensive, but I think actually could really benefit from what's happening now. But we are also looking at stocks, you know, I would say at the opposite end, where they've come down extremely hard. And hopefully, you know, we're trying to look for the companies that are actually quality companies, good balance sheets, can weather the storm, you know, and we believe will recover, you know, nicely or fully, and that because of the sell-off, you know, the returns in the near term might be well above average. In fact, might be significantly better than, say, the first category. And, you know, there really are some interesting opportunities there, because in the last week or so, what we really saw that took the markets down so sharply, and I think this is really interesting, is correlations rose to near 100% across asset classes. So you saw bonds as well as preferred equities also take extreme hits in the last week or so after they'd held up pretty well until then. And part of the reason is at that stage of the market, this stage of the market, a lot of investors were really simply looking to raise cash, and also concerns about bankruptcies, liquidity of companies became an issue. And so you saw extreme blowout of spreads in the bond markets. Now in the equity markets, you know, we look for those situations too, and then we're trying to identify the companies that we're pretty confident will survive, that will have businesses that will come back and that actually won't be particularly impaired. And actually, I'd have to say, like, you know, one of the industries that we think is very interesting is the restaurant industry, which has been forced to shut down. So we've been looking at, you know, the restaurant industry, its distributor suppliers, as well as its vendors, many of whom have been hit, you know, just broad swaths, stocks that have gone down, you know, 30, 40, you know, 50%. And we look at them as, you know, opportunities, especially when we find companies that, you know, we think, you know, have the liquidity short term, and then longer term, actually, you know, we're operating well, well-run companies, and vital to the success of the industry. And then there's a final third category, which is, you know, not necessarily companies that are going to benefit from this, and nor companies that are bombed out, but simply high quality growth companies that were doing well before. You know, they're maybe not bombed out, but they're cheaper than they were. On average, they'd be about 20 to 25% cheaper, since that's how much the market is. And there, you know, we're trying to sort, pick and sort between, you know, which ones are offering, you know, the best upside, but also, you know, where we think the growth trends are stronger versus maybe slightly weaker. I mean, we are entering into a period of economic weakness. Clearly, a lot of consumers and businesses are going to pull back. So one example I would highlight is we're looking carefully at those quality companies, but how much exposure do they have, for example, to small, medium businesses? How much exposure do they have to, say, the travel industry versus the same kind of companies, but perhaps they have more exposure to China, which is already recovering, apparently, or, you know, more exposure to, you know, Fortune 1000 companies that will clearly pay their bills, stay in business. And, you know, we're sorting through that with a pretty big analyst team of about 55 analysts and portfolio managers. And so those are the three categories that we're looking at. And when we try to construct the portfolio, we actually really want to be, I would say at this time, we were very fortunate to be allocated mostly to sort of long-term growth leaders and beneficiaries and high quality, not so much, of course, bombed out companies a month ago. But right now, we're looking to sort of take advantage of the market dislocation. We're definitely adding to some companies that would be considered, you know, bombed out, and also looking for those sort of quality companies at a discount. So I hope that helps, but those are the three buckets we're looking at.
I think that's an excellent point, and I hope if anyone's out there in the power to listen to Dan and take those recommendations, they do so. Sarah, I like to think of what goes up as a small mom and pop operation, you know? And you know what our main product is?
The craziest thing that we all ever saw in markets.
Very good.
It's our prototype.
That is our flagship product. Dan, hopefully they warned you about our gimmick here, the craziest thing we saw in markets this week. A lot of contenders, I think. Sarah, why don't you kick it off? What's the craziest thing you saw this week?
All right. So to me, something that was really just unbelievable and kind of encapsulates everything that we are witnessing right now is the fact that at one point on Thursday, full disclosure, yes, we record on Thursdays, the Dow was more than 20% off of its bottom. So if you are a very technical person, technically that would mean the Dow had entered a bull market at one point, just a couple weeks after it fell into a bear market, just with 3 days of a rally. So just pretty crazy. Sure, it's very technical. Call it a bear market, call it a bull market, call it whatever you want to. But I think it's just really highlights the manic, crazy situation that we're in right now.
Absolutely. I know the word unprecedented has been used an unprecedented amount of times, but that's got to be
Seriously,
one of the craziest things. Yeah. But three days of a bull market, basically, is that all it took? Dan, how about you? Have you witnessed any crazy things in the market this week?
Wow. That's a, well, in the real world market, I think the craziest thing, and I we really got to ask ourselves, every time there's a major crisis, you know what we seem to run out of first? Toilet paper. And maybe you've seen the Johnny Carson 1973 during the oil crisis, but like, why exactly are we all running for the toilet paper first?
People are scared of what happens if you get stuck in your apartment with toilet paper.
And then the other business that's where you seem to be running with toilet paper and, Johnny Walker, you know, because it's toilet paper and booze have been. I mean, people are supposed to be stocking up on the essentials, right?
But those aren't essentials, Dan.
But I've seen signs that say, you know, drive-in hands-free rosé for sale. I'm thinking like, okay, so I need my toilet paper and I need my rosé and I need my Johnny Walker. Right.
Maybe we'll have to create a national strategic toilet paper reserve after this crisis, I guess, to prepare for the next one.
What, TPR?
The TPR, yep.
That's what we'll call it.
The TPR. So what's yours?
Well, mine goes back to your observation about everyone using Zoom video now. And it's on Thursday, the SEC actually came out with an order where it halted trading in Zoom Technologies with the ticker Zoom. And the reason was, is this is not Zoom video. This is a completely unrelated penny stock Chinese-based company that is not at all related to the Zoom video. That is Zoom Video Communications at ZM. But everyone had been buying Zoom Technologies because of the ticker Zoom. And let me give you what the SEC said. In the past 5 weeks, Zoom Video, the video that we've all been using for these virtual happy hours and whatnot, rose 30% during the past 5 weeks. Zoom Technologies, which is a company that doesn't even really exist as far as I can tell anymore, that stock more than tripled over the same time. So as much as you want to think of markets being efficient and, you know, masters of the universe at the switch of all the trading desks, not exactly. Not exactly.
That's a good one,
so
Mike.
Get your tickers right. Everyone get your ticker symbols right.
I have to say, every single time I try to look up Zoom video on the terminal, Zoom Technology comes up first for some reason. And you just have to go around it.
Yeah, maybe it's our fault then.
Yeah. Blame us. All right, Mike, that was a good one. I give it to you.
I get the W. I'm back.
All right, well, with that said, Dan Chung, thank you so much for coming on the show today, even if it meant calling in.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
What Goes Up will be back next week. Until then, you can find us on the Bloomberg Terminal website and app, or wherever you get your podcasts. We'd love it if you took the time to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts so more listeners can find us. And you can find us on Twitter. Follow me at Sarah Ponsek, Mike is at Reaganonymous, and you can also follow Bloomberg Podcasts at Podcasts. What Goes Up is produced by Topher Forges. The head of Bloomberg Podcasts is Francesca Levy. Thanks for listening. See you next time.